It's the return of the podcast that revolutionized the world of podcasts in all fields, not just sports science. Muscle and Fields, ladies and gentlemen, you thought it was over. You thought you were only going to get us, you were only going to get the PG-13 versions of us on other podcasts where we're being professional. But no, we're back in the swamp, baby. We're here for bare knuckle fighting in the form of podcast. I am Pack, and with me, Dr. Milo Wolf.
We out here. Muscle and Fields is back. They said we couldn't do it. They said we couldn't achieve it. Life, it's roadblocks, you know? But here we are, stronger than ever, feelier than ever. And we're going to address some haters today. So haters, Hormosier. Watch out. Hormosier, indeed. Only the few will understand that reference with the nose strip and who Hormosier even is in the first place.
Shout out, Hormosier. Buy our app, you brother. It's coming out soon.
Buy our app. Segway, my app plug. We're selling you something. Let's go.
Let's do it. So, our app, MyAdapt, which I am going to pull up on my phone, and I will briefly show you, is almost
only
ready.
The viewers get it.
Only the viewers get it, true. The listeners, just imagine a really well-designed app. Our app, which has been in the making for 2.5 years now, is almost ready to be released as a closed beta. So, we're going to be inviting a bunch of people that we know. And we will be collecting data as far as how the app is working and so on and so forth. We've been doing a bunch of testing ourselves, but we are closer than ever. I know we've said this 150 times, but if you've ever developed anything, you know that that's just how it goes.
Yeah, the cassette tape at this point is extreme. Out soon, keep your eyes peeled. But at this point, we are actually at that point. I've been training with it for a few weeks now. And like, minus some minor tweaks, things are looking good. It is unlike anything that is out there at the moment. I think it's better than anything that is out there, because saying it's unlike anything might just be it's worse. But it is actually better, I think, than pretty much anything out there. Specifically, the first version will be focused entirely on hypertrophy, but it will have all the features that we promised in the making, and I'll break down what those are in a second, but we'll also eventually bring strength and power building modes as well, so that it can cater to everyone, and that shouldn't be too far off into the future. But for the first version, just for the sake of bringing a product onto the market and having people actually be able to use it, we figured bringing muscle growth out first made sense. And the features included will be stuff like, you know, based on your time availability, it can provide you with sessions that are specifically catered to how much time you have. Based on your injuries, it'll make slight modifications to your training to make it a bit more amenable. Based on your preferences as far as any muscle groups you want to specialize on, it'll prioritize exercises for those muscle groups, allocate greater volumes, adjust volume week to week based on your performance and how difficult each session is and whether you're recovering on time. It'll sort exercises by which ones we think are most effective based on the most up-to-date scientific evidence, like how lengthened biased is the movement, like is it appropriate for the target rep range, do you have the equipment, adjusting weight week to week for you based on the increments of load available, like for example dumbbell exercises, the load is being adjusted by a certain increment that is specific to dumbbells. Just a million different features that are quite unique, I think, compared to other apps out there. And even stuff like the recent rest time meta-analysis that we published as a preprint. Shout out preprints. Yeah, exactly. Preprint hate nowadays is at an all-time high. But even that stuff was implemented into the app, where the rest time recommendations in the app, it has rest timers for each exercise. Those rest times are based on factors like, oh, is it a compound movement or an isolation movement? But also more specifically, based on the most recent evidence that was literally published, what, a week ago at this point, not even?
About a week ago.
On rest times and what rest times maximize hypertrophy and all that sort of stuff. And it's still built to be flexible. So even though the app, for example, might recommend that you rest for 2 minutes between sets of split squats or what have you, if you want to rest longer, you could. And it wouldn't really change anything about how the app worked besides adjusting how long the app predicts your sessions will take. So it is still reasonably flexible in terms of you can select any exercise you want for a muscle group, but we'll recommend you the best ones based on the evidence. You can rest for longer than the app recommends, and it'll still work. So there's plenty of flexibility involved so that even if you don't like exactly what the app gives you up front, you can make adjustments that are still guided by the app and get great training, just catering to your preferences as well.
Yep, 100%. And the super impressive thing, as far as the app goes, at least from my perspective, is that you can literally design any program you want. You want 3 days a week, mostly legs, the app will do that. You want 7 days a week, specializing on chest and upper traps, sure. Then this is something that we really wanted to have out there for a lot of people that do have, you know, special circumstances. I personally don't want to train legs properly. Like, I do a few heavy sets of squats and deadlifts per week. So I prepared my training program using MyAdapt, and I said, cool, just upper body 4 days a week, specializing on delts and arms, and the app made it. And you also get, for the lengthened partial haters out there, all the demo videos, which I'll display now on screen. So every exercise comes with a demo video. All those are in full range of motion.
Take that back right now, because we're not doing false advertising. Most exercises that we could actually find the equipment for.
Okay.
But the exercise library is almost too extensive, to the point where I think there's like 300 to 400 exercises total. And obviously some of them we didn't have the equipment for, and so we couldn't film those, but most of them have videos for them, and hey, all full range of motion, right? And turns out, if you want to lengthen partials, it's not rocket science, just do half of the range of motion being used.
But what about standardization?
I hear you saying, well, if you're concerned about standardization, go check out the Revive Stronger podcast episode with Dr. Mike Israetel, where we discuss standardization and how important it may or may not be.
Oof. Nice. Back on back, plugging everything, plugging other people's podcasts.
Yeah, how do people find MyAdapt? We've done all this work now plugging MyAdapt, but where do people sign up to be notified upon its release and lock in for a lower price than they could otherwise ever get?
MyAdapt.com. There is literally a button that says notify me, and you click that and notify me on launch, actually. You put just your email, you click tick, I confirm that I'm happy to receive marketing communications from MyAdapt in line with their privacy policy. There's a CAPTCHA as well, but a smart one where you don't have to click shit. You click notify me on launch, and you're good to go. And
hey, baby. 7 minutes in, and all we've done is plug our own app. Let's fucking go. Muscle and Feels is back.
You gotta respect it, though, because cool. Like, we've been working on this behind the scenes, especially you, quite a bit the past few years, and you know, aside from the odd, oh yeah, there's this happening as well. Like, there's no links on our profiles. We don't have, we haven't put out any logos, or like, we've put the odd picture, I think a couple of quote unquote announcements. But
yeah.
One thing that we didn't mention is that MyAdapt will be on both the App Store, the Apple App Store, and the Google Play Store. So it's going to be an actual app that you can have on your phone versus some of the apps that currently exist in the form of web apps. So, indeed. Yeah,
real deal. To both operating systems. But yeah, like, we have a few minor tweaks left to implement, but then we should be able to release it for the wider market after a bit more testing. So yeah, really excited. It's at a place now and a stage now where we can release it pretty soon. And it's just nice to have such a flexible tool. Like, even as a coach, I don't particularly enjoy writing my own program anymore. And to just be able to go through sign up and have it give me something that I can assess on all the sort of scientific principles of, okay, generally exercises should be ordered in this fashion. Okay, generally these exercises are better for hypertrophy. All right, generally these rep ranges are best for hypertrophy. And across the week, we want to get a variety of rep ranges in, for example. All right, as far as volumes go, this sort of volume range is effective. Being able to click a few buttons and then it giving me a program that caters to those preferences that I put in, and have the program it spits out be in alignment with those scientific principles, essentially look at it and be like, oh, this is actually solid. Like, if I were to look at it and be like, okay, is this really in conflict with any of the scientific evidence? Maybe no. And having actually ran some of the sessions, they're all pretty enjoyable and productive sessions. So I've been really enjoying the training there.
Yeah, exactly. And for like, just to tell the listeners and not really show the viewers, I have my arm specialization here, and it says I should be starting with standing overhead dumbbell tricep extensions. If I want to change the exercise, I just click the button that says change, and then I got a bunch of alternatives that are rated in terms of their effectiveness. I can just click ranked the next even. One.
Yeah, ranks, sorry. But the app actually lists and ranks exercises in order of descending effectiveness. Such that the first ones you see are what we deem the most effective based on scientific evidence. A lot of criteria like, all right, is it placing the target muscle into a stretch position? Is there tension in that stretch position? Is it sufficiently loadable for the rep range? Are there other muscle groups that could go out first? Like a lot of factors that go into what makes an exercise effective for hypertrophy are also implemented into this. And then that is taken into account into the calculation of what does the app recommend you. And that's being updated continuously as more scientific evidence comes out.
Yeah, and that's a big thing, because if we see, for example, during the beta testing or even early release that, oh, you know what, guys, this is volume is too high or whatever, that's something that we can easily adjust. If the infamous DDS meta on volume, when it comes out in 2038.
If it comes out, yeah, at this point.
We will have solved the app by then. So for the future owners of the app, they will be able to adjust training volume relatively easy.
Once the volume meta-analysis by data-driven strength does eventually get published, they've been working on this for quite a while now, they will be so wealthy off the payments from big volume that they'll actually be able to purchase our app outright. And so, you know, they can just do it themselves. It's that simple.
Yeah, I fear that there may be some like negotiations going on behind the scenes. That's the delay. Like, you got minimum dose calling, you got big volume calling, and they're like, look, you know, there's different numbers being thrown out there, and I think they're just trying to get the best deal possible before releasing the paper in the world.
Yeah, hey man, I'm just looking forward to finally getting a meta-analysis on volume again. You know, it's been too long. Basval 2022. It's been 2 years. You know, we need more.
We need more.
On that note, because data-driven strength, specifically Zach, Josh, and Jake, are all well-known for being absolute social media influencers, shall we begin the haters part of this episode?
Yes, I wanted to start that off first by addressing the infamous leg extension reel. All right, Milo, I'm here with my pitchfork, and I'm going to shout at you for saying that the leg extension is the worst quad exercise, and that you did it all for engagement and clicks, and that you don't really believe it. What's your response? Right.
A few things. One, when I released that short, I didn't even watch it before posting, because at this stage, like, hey, hashtag grind set, hashtag grind, hashtag sigma grind, people might have thought that was rage bait. That was my genuine opinion, and at this point, the work rate is so high that I'm not really able to double check what did I record 4 weeks ago that is being released today all the time. But as far as the actual substance of the argument went, I stand by it entirely. I think that ultimately what makes an exercise good or bad, or potentially the best or the worst, depends on, one, what you're doing it for, and in this case it's hypertrophy, and two, opportunity cost, meaning there are other exercises and you could instead be doing those. So in this case, we're talking about hypertrophy, and we're talking about if the leg extension were to be the worst exercise, then all other exercises accomplishing a similar role for hypertrophy would be better than it, right? By definition, because it's the worst. So it ranks at the very bottom. In this case, there are two other knee isolation movements I can think of, and those would be reverse Nordic curls and sissy squats. I don't think a knee extension movement and a compound squatting pattern or lunge pattern are interchangeable, because with a knee isolation exercise like a leg extension or a sissy squat, you're keeping the hip static, which then allows you to actually train the rectus femoris, which a compound lower body movement like the squat or lunge doesn't really allow you to do. So it's kind of, there's two categories of exercises for quad training, one being compound movements and one being muscle isolation movements that also allow you to train the rectus femoris. In the category of isolation movements, which is what the leg extension falls under, I think it's the worst choice, straight up. And that's on one theoretical basis, and that theoretical basis is supported by some recent research I've been involved in. So that basis is essentially the leg extension is a shortened partial. In most leg extension machines that you'll find, like I'm comfortable saying like 50 to 80% of leg extension machines available commercially worldwide, you would be at around a 90-degree hip angle. So that's essentially shortening the rectus femoris by a decent amount. And the deepest amount of knee flexion you can get at the bottom is around like 90 to maybe like 100, 110 degrees of knee flexion. For context, you can comfortably get 140 plus degrees of knee flexion during a squat. So you should be able to get that on leg extension theoretically, right? And so you're missing out on at least like 30 to maybe 50 plus degrees of range of motion during a leg extension at the knee. And you're also shortening the rectus femoris by having your hips bent. Meanwhile, in the, and just for context, longer muscle length training, hashtag lower muscle length, hashtag paid off with big lower muscle length, etc. But there is quite a bit of evidence out there now that training in a more lengthened position, all else being equal, is better for hypertrophy, right? And specifically, most of that evidence, not most, but a good deal of that evidence is in the quadriceps. So if anything, you could make the argument that this is where it's most applicable in actually training the quadriceps. And like across 25 studies or so now, longer muscle length training, this is another lengthened partial episode, is better than shorter muscle length training for hypertrophy. And so if you're comparing the leg extension to the reverse Nordic curl, where you're fully extending the hips and you're able to get to unlimited amounts of knee flexion, so maximizing the stretch of the femoris, and the sissy squat, where the same is true, like, yeah, the leg extension is a worse choice for hypertrophy. Is it theoretical? Because we don't have studies directly comparing the leg extension to, say, a reverse Nordic curl or a sissy squat? Absolutely. But amongst those three exercises, amongst other exercises that could be accomplishing the same goal, I think it's the worst quad exercise for hypertrophy. And more specifically, as I mentioned, we have quite a few studies looking at muscle length in the quadriceps and how training in the stretch position is more beneficial for hypertrophy. But more specifically, we now have a study that hasn't even been preprinted yet that I was involved in, where in a within-participant design, where participants trained their legs separately. So they did leg extensions single-legged with both legs, but with one leg, they performed these leg extensions with a 90-degree hip angle, kind of as you would traditionally see for most leg extension machines, which shortens the rectus femoris. And with the other leg, they extended their hips to about 40 degrees, which lengthens the rectus femoris more. And they measured both vastus lateralis growth at two sites and rectus femoris growth at two sites. Now, you would expect, based on the insertions of the rectus femoris and the vastus lateralis, to see essentially no difference in hypertrophy of the vastus lateralis, because it doesn't matter what the hip positioning is. But you would expect to see more hypertrophy of the rectus femoris when your hips are more extended, because it's more stretched out, right? And indeed, that's exactly what we saw. Specifically, with a 40-degree hip angle, they observed, well, we observed 50% more hypertrophy at the distal site and 170% more hypertrophy at the proximal site. And so quite substantially more hypertrophy when you're performing the leg extension in a more stretch-biased fashion. And so that's some of the most direct evidence we could get on the question of, is the leg extension a bad quad exercise? Because when you take the leg extension and you turn it from a slightly shittier exercise, which is what most leg extensions are, to a slightly better exercise by extending your hips, it seems to produce more hypertrophy. Now, could I go out and say that if you were to extend your hips fully, like you would in a reverse Nordic curl or in a sissy squat, that would produce even more hypertrophy, and thus, for sure, the reverse Nordic curl and the sissy squat are better exercises? No. But until we have several studies on that exact research question, no one can make any claim with much confidence. And that applies to basically like everything, right? But based on this generalizable principle across these 25 studies that lengthened training is better than shortened training for hypertrophy, and based on this one study as well, where extending your hips more led to substantially more rectus femoris growth, we can make a pretty compelling case that the leg extension in its category is the worst quad exercise for hypertrophy. So like that's where I was coming from, and people lost their shit, and most of them not really a clue about what they're talking about, so it is what it is.
Because the tears were, oh, the leg extension has been shown to cause muscle growth, and it, oh. But the reality is, we are talking about, it's like saying, okay, I've used this analogy many times, the Audi, whatever, A3 is the worst Audi you can get. That doesn't mean that the car won't drive and it won't be a perfectly fine car, or that the leg extensions in this case won't cause muscle growth. And yeah, they're an exercise that you shouldn't use no matter your circumstances. So let's say you can't do a reverse Nordic curl because whatever, you have some issue.
The other thing is also people complaining about, oh, well, anyone can do a leg extension and only a few people can do squats or reverse Nordics. And there is some truth to that. But then I've never seen people use that argument for why the pull-up is a bad exercise. You know, Like, yeah, okay, yeah. Just because it's hard and it has a minimum threshold of strength. And the other thing is, in the sissy squat and reverse Nordic crawl specifically, you can modify the movement very, very easily to make it like something almost anyone can do. And it will still be more effective based on the mechanics involved in all likelihood than a leg extension, even if you modify it. And the other, on the other spectrum, like other end of the spectrum, people were complaining about it not being sufficiently loadable. Like, oh, what do you do when you're too strong for them? It's like, I'm reasonably strong, right? Like I can probably squat 400 pounds for 5 to 10 reps, 450 pounds for 5 to 10 reps, whatever. And I can do like 5 to 8 good reverse Nordic curls with a good tempo. So like, I just don't know that I know of many people who with good technique need to worry about being able to add load to reverse Nordic curls. And ditto with sissy squats. And even if you did want to, it's actually pretty easy. You grab a plate and you hold it on your chest. And in all likelihood, because it's such a hard movement already, you won't need to worry about holding more than about 10 kilograms or 20 pounds or 20 kilograms and 40 pounds. And guess what? The same thing applies to leg extensions. I can do leg extensions with a full stack pretty easily. I can get probably like 10 to 30 plus reps with a full stack on leg extensions. And so if anything, unless I were to now purchase a gym pin, the same exact issue would theoretically apply to leg extensions. But people were just losing their shit.
That's a good point with leg extensions. If you are like relatively strong and you've been training legs, you can mug the full stack of any commercial leg extension. Well, even myself. Like I do a couple of singles, a couple of triples of squats per week, and I can comfortably rep out the full stack on the leg extensions, both in your gym and my gym, just because it's one of those exercises.
Hey, shall we talk about the full stack method?
Yeah, sure. Just let me say a few closing words on the leg extension. It's like, guys, everybody's happy to shit on exercises like the dumbbell kickback and say, yep, this is the worst. Like, obviously, the dumbbell kickback will still cause growth and you can still do it. And, you know, there's going to be people that will like the exercise and they will want to do it. And it's okay. It's fine. Similarly, with the leg extensions, nobody said don't ever dare to do leg extensions. We're talking about a hypothetical comparison between the three quad isolation exercises and which one is best. That doesn't make the other one absolutely useless. And citing research that has shown that, yeah, it has caused muscle growth is not really proving anything.
Yeah, that's proving only that it grows muscle. But that was never the claim at stake here. The claim at stake was that it's likely a worse exercise than other alternatives in the same category. You know, it's the worst exercise, not doesn't grow muscle. I never said that, and I would never say that, because guess what? If you do some lifting, especially in beginners, you will grow muscle, you know. But hey ho, cope and seethe.
So the full stack method, which is something that we're currently in the process of patenting, is a way for you to not only ensure that you're always working at a sufficient proximity to failure to maximize hypertrophy gains, but you're also biasing and loading the stretch position no matter what, because you are lifting so heavy that you can't not load.
Because you're ego lifting and you're the biggest dog in the gym. You feel me? Like, hey, everyone's going to be impressed when you just go from machine to machine and full stack everything. There's very few machines nowadays that I can't full stack at least some cheeky partial reps on, you know, like 5 reps or whatever. And hey, stack loaded machines are where it's at time efficiency wise. Are they often optimized for hypertrophy? No. Do I always care? No. Sometimes I just want to go in, do my few heavy sets on the full stack method, TM, get some hypertrophy, blast it, and get out. And, you know, maybe I want to go from the chest press machine to the preacher curl machine and then the leg press machine and just full stack it, you know? Like, sometimes it's all about being time efficient, not worrying too much, and hey, additional benefit, you don't have to worry about standardization anymore because you're always lifting the same weight. You just have to worry about reps now, so it's one less variable to worry about. It's that simple. Full stack method, sign up now, forget my adapt, just full stack everything.
Exactly. But in all seriousness, if you're strong enough and you can like legit lift obviously like it doesn't have to be the full stack, but if you can lift the full stack for a few reps, you know, when you're feeling like it, just blast the full stack, do as many full ROM reps as you can, do some partials afterwards, and the next time just try to beat your reps.
I mean, hey, talking about partials after failure, this is another lengthened partial episode, baby. In that study I just mentioned on leg extension, we also compared two calf raise variations using within participant design. In one leg, they just ended a calf raise set when they couldn't get another full range of motion repetition. In the other leg, they extended past this point by doing lengthened partials after full range of motion failure until they couldn't get another lengthened partial usually. And they saw about 50% more hypertrophy by doing those lengthened partials after failure, which is something I've called lengthened supersets in the past, just because you're supersetting full reps with lengthened partials at the end. So hey, on a movement that is hardest in that peak squeeze position, that shortened position, like calf raise, like a lot of back movements, etc., doing those partials after failure might just increase your hypertrophy. And that lends itself well to that full stack method. Let's say you can only get 3 full reps because the stack is a bit too heavy for you, bro. I'm sorry. Just doing a couple partials and boom, you're in the effective hypertrophy rep range of at least 5 reps. Congratulations, you're growing, you know?
Congratulations indeed. And more on lengthened partials because we have an upcoming study this summer that we're still waiting for ethical approval. So TNC apply. But do you want to slightly touch on this before we continue addressing the haters?
Sure. Contrary to popular belief, we are not just social media PhDs. We are also actual PhDs, and we're still involved in research, which, by the way, alongside my 4 other jobs, is mostly a labor of love. So, you know, take that, haters. On a more serious note, we, the whole AMDL, Applied Muscle Development Lab at Lehman College, is planning another range of motion study, specifically addressing the haters. And the haters being the people who claim that lengthened partials only really benefit beginners or untrained lifters, right? And that's based on a whole, what I think is a flawed assumption, which is that, oh, lengthened training benefits you through increasing fascicle length, and fascicle length increases only occur in relatively untrained lifters for a few weeks or a few months at a time. And therefore, once you've been training for a few weeks or a few months, that adaptation has essentially stalled, right? That well has run dry, and lengthened training no longer benefits you in terms of hypertrophy. Now, unfortunately, we don't have many studies on range of motion in even somewhat trained lifters. And so that claim has gone largely unchallenged because there's no way to prove or disprove it in any meaningful capacity. You just have to look at the weight of the evidence, and that's quite a beta thing to do as opposed to just straight up looking at direct evidence. And so we are committed to bringing actual research to trained lifters and lengthened training. And so this summer we'll be running a study in the upper body in the context of a relatively complete training program, comparing lengthened partials to a full range of motion in trained lifters who've been training for at least 6 months, training one side of their body with a full range of motion and the other side of their body with lengthened partials. Essentially, that research design of training the two sides of the body separately, so the left limb with full range of motion, for example, and the right limb with lengthened partials, just allows us to minimize noise and variance that might be caused due to differences in sleep, genetics, nutrition, etc., between the two groups. Because the two groups, quote-unquote, are just different sides of the same bodies of the same people, that is no longer a confounder in the results. And so we'll be running that study, looking at hypertrophy of the biceps and triceps, and seeing whether in people who've been training for at least 6 months, there is still a benefit in terms of hypertrophy to lengthened partials. My hunch is that there will be, but I am very open to being proven wrong by the haters and by the results of our very own study. So yeah, look out for that. It should be running in the study in the summer. We'll be out in New York running that study, spearheading it, with the help of the gracious Jeff Nippert funding the study. So yeah, if you're in New York by any chance and you're like, hey, I'll be sticking around for 8 weeks and you want to join a study, consider joining our study. You know, you
could
contribute to hashtag science.
We'll be making the appropriate announcements once IRB approval is in. And yeah, it would be cool to actually get some people outside of the university population that will be recruited. But I'm sure there's going to be some young, well, how does Omar say it?
Snappers? Young blood, young bucks, whippersnappers, yeah.
Whippersnappers that will be joining. On the Omar note, we are both dripped out, and this wasn't arranged, just to show Mr. Omar the dedication and the allegiance to the brand. Both dripped out in Rascal apparel, And
nice segue, because we are, in fact, sponsored athletes. That's right. Use codes WOLF and PACK. Not sure if
Dr. PACK. PACK.
Dr. PACK. Use codes WOLF and Dr. PACK at checkout for 10% off your Rascal Drip. Honestly, though, serious note, amongst my favorite training clothing of all time. Omar did not pay me to say this, but there's two kinds of clothing that I've enjoyed training in my training career. One is the dirt cheapest, just durable clothing. So like literally $5 for a t-shirt, and I didn't care what it looked like or anything, but it was durable, comfortable, and I could train in. And then Rascal clothing, which has the same, if not more durability from what I've seen so far, looks a lot nicer, and I like the designs. So I would highly recommend it, and it's very lower body training friendly as well, in that I can actually train lower body and not have it rip or sweat like a insert cuss word.
Person that sweats. Indeed. Yeah, I'm just scrolling on the phone to just show that, hey, man's been out here, and both of us actually. This is me celebrating the successful defense of my PhD in...
I got you that t-shirt, you fuck.
Oh, you did. Nice. 2021. Yeah. So even better for the point that I'm going to make. Not only wearing Rascal then, and if we go even further back, still dripped out. That's 3 years ago and running. There we go. It's a brand.
To go even further, we hadn't even met Omar Isif then.
No, not at all. So there's not no even potential. Spoken to him.
You know, it's not even because we're just trying to make a quick buck or we're trying to get Omar to make a quick buck. We genuinely think the clothing is that good. So... code WOLF, code Dr. PACK for 10% off, and to line the our own pockets, because we're making big buck off this.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, actually, super cool designs. And not just training clothes. Like, these are literally my everyday clothes. And the designs and the material and the colors are blast. And yeah.
Rascal t-shirt, Richard Mille on the wrist. What else do you need? You know,
and a Ferrari F50 sponsored by Omar. A Ferrari F50 may be a bicycle, but you
I
know,
think the Ferrari F50 is the worst car out there.
Yeah.
Lose it now. Get very angry about how dare I call the Ferrari F50 not capable of moving or driving.
Yeah, it was very, very annoying to see people thinking they had the their I got you moment, citing the research that shows that leg extensions do indeed cause muscle growth.
Dude, like, this will get him. It's like,
nice on the growth. Nice on the pull-ups and chin-ups comment, actually, because that's like, there's a lot of people out there that are not getting more than like 2 or 3 reps on pull-ups and chin-ups, and people absolutely love those, and they're like, yeah, you can do them assisted, and it's like, bro, you can do
In fact, people big it up, you know. It's like, oh yeah, pull-ups and dips and push-ups, you know, they're great for packing on mass, you know. You know, biomechanically, perhaps not even the best movements.
They're like, hey, they're great movements.
Hey, why dips are the worst chest exercise? Get ready for the next reel. People will lose it. I am low-key thinking of making another reel at this point, just to get at the haters a little bit, of saying at the start, the leg extension is even worse than I thought. And citing the research I mentioned earlier, where it's like the hip being more extended led to more growth. And that, you know. Cope and seed at that point.
Oh, it would be nice to also do like a research project which you ask people which exercise looks cooler, and you have the leg extension in there as well. And I'm sure it would rank pretty low because it's just a very vanilla looking exercise. But which one looks more effective, and you get like a sissy squat and a leg extension just to bust balls. But in all seriousness,
I should just run a series of studies comparing leg extension to every other quad exercise and obviously falsify all of the data. Just for the fun of it, and finally prove all the haters wrong. You know?
But to the point where it doesn't even make sense anymore, where it's like 9,000% more growth.
A 16th study on a leg extension, and people are like, come on, Milo, we all know you're faking the shit. And I'm like, nah, don't worry.
Nice. Another sort of what would you call it? Another thing that people have been hating on quite a bit is the social media PhD placebo, but we've addressed this multiple times now properly on podcasts, so I don't think it's worth addressing here as well. Check out the Iron Culture podcast episodes. One is just with me, the other one is with myself, Milo, and Max Coleman, and this idea that, oh, we are you know, somehow driving, using science for content. And that's the main motivation behind science. Because as you know, traveling to a different country and staying there away from our loved ones and families for 10 weeks is exactly what we need so that we can make that extra video, when in reality, we could just wait for a study to come out and make that video anyways.
Classic social media PhD mindset, traveling away for 10 weeks, essentially getting paid nothing to do it, by the way, and low-key spending your own money to be able to contribute to research, only to then make one video about it that you'll probably make £20 off of, you know? Like classic big buck, financially driven social media PhD moment.
Because that's how the current top creators on YouTube are doing it as well. They're actively doing research and reporting on their findings.
For sure. That's what they don't want you to know. You know, like it's in the social media PhD handbook you get when you decide to sell out.
Oh, man. But we've also been seeing some hate on preprints that is tied to the fact that, now we are using preprints to get the studies out there earlier so we can make content. As if you're like a social media PhD, you can't, like, you could easily say, you know, we have this study in review and it showed.
As you just did. Didn't even need a preprint. I have a pre-registration I can show you, which, by the way, makes for better science and still needs to be adopted by the many people criticizing social media PhDs. But I can show you a pre-registration. But you don't even need a preprint to be able to do this. And if anything, you could comfortably argue that the preprints are furthering science by, hey, oh shit, someone else already did a study on volume, like the meta-analysis now, for example. Had we not had knowledge of DDS doing it, like for example, through our own contacts or what have you, we maybe would have gone ahead and ran that project and wasted a lot of man hours, right?
100%.
The same thing can be said for preprints. If now, for example, you see a study, one example that comes to mind is we ran a study on seated versus standing calf raises for growth. And just as we'd started to run that study in the AMDL lab, Beam College, Brad Schoenfeld, shout out, we also saw that a study exactly on that topic was published by Kinoshita and colleagues. And had we seen that a couple months earlier through preprints, maybe we wouldn't have put our limited resource into that basket. Maybe we could have investigated a different question. And that would have saved on resources and potentially furthered science overall by answering a different question that maybe was more urgent and more in need of evidence than this question that has a study now.
Further,
so yeah, I think it's cope.
Yeah, and further on that, the huge preprint by Data Driven Strength on relationship between proximity to failure and strength and hypertrophy, because it was released as a preprint, it received a lot of feedback, including feedback on the stats and stuff that many reviewers wouldn't be able to pick up on. I don't know if I've ever seen, since working with James Steele and since James became super advanced with his statistical approach, I doubt I have ever seen somebody go like, oh, have you considered doing your statistical analysis this way or changing this and that? Usually, it's either people directly, and I quote, saying, I don't get the stats, they look fine, or not commenting on them whatsoever. But since the preprint was out and people paid attention to it, there's been an update to the preprint and subsequently to the version that is going out on peer review, where the stats have changed and have actually slightly altered, not to an extreme degree, but they have altered the conclusions of the study, or at least the results of the study, because of the feedback that the preprint received.
Yeah, and I can literally think of another example off the top of my head, and that was the infamous Eric Helms bulking study, where actually I was the first person to provide comments on Research Square, which is a website that allows for preprints to be published. I provide comments, and guess what? When they then submitted for the full manuscript, they included an additional figure as part of my feedback and a couple other things. And that would not have happened had preprints not been a thing. And it's a lot more difficult to make a correction to an existing manuscript visible than it is to make changes to a preprint before the thing gets published. You know,
are you crazy?
I mean, that's a hot take right there.
Not a hot take at all. I'd say it's almost impossible to get somebody to change a published paper unless there's a big
fraud or something. Yeah,
something huge.
Yeah, I've seen maybe 2 to 3 corrections in my lifetime on resistance training or nutrition papers. And even then, like, oftentimes they're formatted in such a way, because they're so rare, they're not really formatted in a way that makes it very easy to pick up on. And so many people will have cited the paper already by the time the correction comes out, and sometimes miss that there was a correction, or it just not impact the final paper very much. So preprints, especially if you are a hashtag social media PhD and are able to get more people to scrutinize your paper, which kind of is the way it should be, that you're communicating science to a wider public, and therefore they actually lay eyes on your paper as a preprint, provide feedback, that can then make for a much stronger, more robust final manuscript that then informs practitioners and other scientists at large when it's finally published as an actual paper, TM.
Yes, exactly. And another example, so we preprinted, and we'll get to more hate in a second, specifically on the paper that I will refer to. We preprinted this REST meta-analysis that was spearheaded by Alex Zinger from the Lehman College Lab. Shout out to the whole lab. Obviously, we were part of that project, but, you know, credits given where credit's due. But Dr. Schoenfeld, aka Brad, messaged us the other day, emailed us, and said, "I have updated the Google Doc and made some additional revisions on the manuscript after getting some feedback from the preprint. I have also incorporated blah, blah, blah suggestions and added a few more things." And that's all right before sending it to peer review. So the manuscript is already improved before going to peer review. And if you know that the peer review process is a hit or miss process, you know that that's quite valuable, because there are cases where peer review will just lead to some minor changes or no changes, and then that's about it.
Because what you have to realize with peer review as well is that oftentimes what it ends up being is you're an overworked academic. You get an email in your inbox from some random journal asking you to review a paper you're not even entirely qualified to review. You review it. You have about 15 minutes between other important tasks to like take a look at it, and you leave about 2 lines of feedback because you're not being paid for it and you have other more pressing things to attend to and you're already overworked. Peer review can often be a shit show. And so if anything, preprint being more public and having people who are actually interested in the topic and likely more knowledgeable peer review it, outside of the formal peer review process that often happens behind closed doors, I find the case against preprints to be quite difficult to make. The one thing real quick that I'd like to address is some people mentioning that their results could be stolen and someone else could publish before them, right? Like, oh no, if I'm going to preprint it, maybe someone else is going to take my paper, submit it to a journal, and then like steal my paper essentially. And that's like essentially a non-concern, because preprints are already public, so you could literally be like, oh, but I posted this paper as a preprint before these people even submitted it for publication. So clearly, like, some name right. So, like, I don't know. I'm very preprint-pilled. Media PhDs, that's who. And it's
Like, we got to get out of the echo chamber as well, man. Like, people, like, nobody really cares or is going to be out there stealing science. And I don't know if...
Meanwhile, yeah. James Steele stealing yet another paper.
On that note, we published, and I'll let you cover the results of the meta, because you've already done that for a bunch of your content. Actually, I have as well. This REST meta-analysis was preprinted, and it found...
Wow, smooth. I found basically the same things as a systematic review from 2017, I think, by Grzyk and colleagues, which is the following. Based on 9 studies we included, 7 of which had the shorter and longer rest time groups be set equated. So they did the same number of sets, same number of reps, etc. But the only difference was how long people rested for between sets. 7 of the studies included were like that. 2 of the studies included had volume load equation, which meant basically that if the longer rest group achieved a certain volume load, that is sets times reps times weight, let's say, for example, they did that, they got to 2,000 kilograms of volume load on the leg press over 3 sets, then the short rest group would do as many sets as required to also meet that same 2,000 kilograms of volume load. And so they would often do additional sets to make up for the fact that the performance on each individual set was lower. So 7 of the studies included were set equated, 2 of the studies included were volume load equated. When you looked at these 9 studies in aggregate, what they basically found was that when you just dichotomized conditions into being longer or shorter. So each study had a longer and short rest time group. Then the longer rest time groups tend to do better than the short rest time groups. But that's not very informative because you're not asking, should I rest longer or shorter between sets? Because that doesn't really tell us anything. You're asking, how long should I rest for between sets to get the most muscle growth? And so we also did a comparison of different durations of rest between sets, from short being under 1 minute between sets of rest, intermediate being 1 to 2 minutes, long being 2 to 3 minutes, and very long being over 3 minutes. And essentially, the most favorable results were found between 1 to 2 minutes, and specifically, worse hypertrophy was seen when resting for less than 60 seconds between sets. Keep in mind that is in the context of studies that mostly equate for the number of sets. So if you were resting for less than 60 seconds, but did more additional sets to make up for it, like for example, you did 5 sets instead of 3 or 4, right? There's a good chance you'd see as much hypertrophy or maybe even more. The two studies that we have that looked at volume load equated contexts were a study by Longo and colleagues where they compared 1 versus 3 minutes of rest and found the same hypertrophy when the 1 minute group did more sets to make up for it. And a study by Hill-Haas and colleagues where, if I recall correctly, they compared 20 seconds of rest between sets to 80 seconds of rest between sets, but doing additional sets with 20 seconds of rest to get to the same overall total volume load. And in that study, they actually found more hypertrophy with only 20 seconds of rest. And so if you're resting for less than 60 seconds between sets, you probably do want to do more sets to make up for the reduction in performance, right? But then in general, a rest time of 1 to 2 minutes between sets for hypertrophy is a great starting place. And potentially, if you're training the lower body or if you're doing compounds or what have you, you may want to rest for a little bit longer. And if you're more trained, potentially that sort of stuff. But I think 1 to 2 minutes for most movements is a great starting point, maybe closer to 1 minute for upper body isolation movements and closer to 2 minutes for lower body compound movements, maybe generally a bit longer if you're more trained and or training closer to failure. But that is quite speculative. In fact, in our meta-analysis, we didn't find anything to that effect. So 1 to 2 minutes is a good starting place for most people.
And people seemed to lose their minds when we made them aware of these results. So we made a meme slash, like, I don't know if you'd call it a graphical abstract, but yeah, mostly a meme. That said, approximately 1.5 minutes of rest between sets may be enough to maximize muscle growth, and resting less than 1 minute is probably not a big deal. Obviously, a ton of caveats explained in the caption. The paper itself as well is very cautious. There is limitations mentioned, blah, blah. There's even more limitations added after the preprint was published and received feedback. And there were a lot of people out there that took this as, what, you're telling me that I should rest just 1.5 minutes and that's the only way to go? Now, obviously, I am solo here. Milo is in the toilet peeing on the haters, and that's what you get. But it's crazy that regardless of how many disclaimers and caveats you put out there, and the way I perceived this paper was like, oh, okay, you know, things are even more flexible. Sure, if you want to maximize hypertrophy, resting for longer, probably a good idea. And nobody's telling you, don't rest for as long as you need. If you're ready to puke and need an extra 30 seconds or a minute, sure. What?
Short rest times are the worst. You heard it here first, folks. Basically, what we mean is short rest times do tend to reduce hypertrophy on a per set basis, but they still work. Shocking. I know. It's almost like you can call something the worst without saying it's completely ineffective. But yeah, I agree. I think people lost their shit a little bit. When, if anything, the optimistic and sort of heartening conclusion from that paper should have been, oh, wow. Maybe even people who don't have much time to train can still make great gains because you don't need to rest for quite as long as we thought between sets to optimize hypertrophy. And like, that is a very good takeaway because it's good news. Hey, if you've been resting for longer, guess what? You don't have to spend as much time in the gym anymore and you have more time for other things if you wanted to. Or you can still keep resting for a longer time if you enjoy it. But the people who are limited on time can make better gains than we thought. Like, how is this bad news? Why are you upset?
Let's see what Paul Carter had to say. Paul Carter, you are officially invited to a debate between either of us or the both of us or whatever, any topic you like, length and partials, and a drag race between my M4 and your M8, which you will win unless I absolutely modify the shit out of my M4. But if we account for our age difference, I'll race you when I'm 45 as well.
Since we're now at the dick measurement contest portion of this episode, I'd like to mention, we have repeatedly, people have repeatedly asked Paul if he would debate me on length and partials or like the sort of stuff. And he's flat out refused. So I doubt he'll take up the challenge there. But if he does, it would be a great time. Hosted on Muscle and Feels. Yeah. You know, the clout will go crazy. Social media PhD is rejoicing right now.
Woo! Shout out to Paul Carter though for being for wanting to start like an animal shelter and being real cool with animals. I think given our love for our cats and his love for his dogs, we would eventually maybe get along with like a strict like contract that we're not going to discuss anything sporn science related.
Correct.
Anything.
Yeah, pretty much. But to be honest, like there is no real beef. It's more like, okay, bro, why you gotta keep making these claims?
All right, so he says, since no one wanted the longer in-depth version... Okay, so he says, so a new meta-analysis just dropped on Respirit saying new data, which there's no new data. Hasn't there been new data since the latest meta-analysis, Dr. Milo Wolf?
Well, we didn't even have a meta-analysis, we had a systematic review. And yes, there has been. There's been the study by Longman colleagues, true. And at least one other one, I suspect. Let me just quickly open up the coding sheet for the meta-analysis that I actually extracted. I think there might just be one, but let me check. Whoop! There was only one, and that's their Longo et al. Study. But still, that was a very important study because it had four conditions, one set-equated comparison, one volume-load-equated comparison, and so it was important. And also, when you only qualitatively or narratively synthesize results, you can miss on things that you would see with a quantitative approach. And when you only quantitatively synthesize results, you can miss out on things that you would otherwise pick up on with more of a narrative review where like you actually look into a lot of the variables you wouldn't otherwise consider. So like it's a silly claim.
Yes. You know. So he says the meta-analysis consisted of 9 studies, 6 of which were done using untrained subjects. Some people also coped about that. And the one study that had a practical method that used resistance-trained men found that longer rest periods promote greater increases in muscle strength and hypertrophy in young resistance-trained men. Only missing from this meta-analysis was the MAGIN study that was also used well-trained men and found that 3 minutes of rest periods just about doubled the amount of gains compared to 1 minute rest. Ultimately, this meta didn't tell us anything that we didn't already know. A rest longer between sets of combos like leg press and heavy rows, you probably don't have to rest as long between single joint exercises. Truly groundbreaking stuffs. Okay, I get that and I understand. Cool. Not every latest meta-analysis is going to be groundbreaking. That's not how that works.
So that is wild to me on several accounts. Number one is that he just straight up cherry-picked one of the 3 studies in trained participants. So for context, there were 3. There was one by Schoenfeld and colleagues, one by the Suzai colleagues, and one by Souza Jr. and colleagues, I believe. Uh-huh. And essentially, 2 of them found more hypertrophy with the... Let me verify real quick, actually. The Schoenfeld study found greater hypertrophy with 3 versus 1 minute of rest, if I'm recalling correctly. Uh-huh. And then the other 2, which I'm assuming are the ones that he is not referring to, found the same hypertrophy or even better hypertrophy with lower rest times. So he just decided, okay, there's 3, but I'm only going to talk about this one because it's the one I deem practical. And then the same applies to his citation of the Mangin study. The reason why the study wasn't included in the meta-analysis is pretty obvious, which is that the rest times were different between the 2 groups, but they also performed different number of repetitions with each set. So it was a comparison of 10 to 12 reps versus 3 to 5 reps. So that's why wasn't included because it wasn't equated for other variables. And funnily enough, there are several studies in the same vein as this one where essentially they compare sort of like heavier training with longer rest times to lighter training with shorter rest times, so more traditional strength training approaches to more traditional hypertrophy approaches. He just happened to cite the one I'm aware of that found quite a bit more hypertrophy with longer rest times. I think the 2 or 3 other ones I'm aware of didn't find this. But he just happened to cite the Mangin one, which is the only one with that result. So in both his selection of the trained participant studies within the meta-analysis and the one study he wanted to bring up outside of the meta-analysis and even question why it wasn't included, a bit of a cherry-picking situation going on.
And he adds, people don't seem to understand the mechanisms behind needing longer or shorter rest periods. And keep in mind, this is a post that got like nearly, oh no, not nearly, 5,000 plus likes. He says, 2, it's really just a motor unit recruitment issue. 3, anything that creates an interference effect of fatigue will reduce motor unit recruitment or reduce excitation at the peripheral level. If metabolites are not allowed to clear, that will produce an interference effect at the motor unit recruitment level. If there's a cardio demand existing, that will create an interference effect because it increases our perception of effort. Noobs have a motor unit recruitment deficit, so they don't need to rest as long between sets as well-trained lifters. For me, I need 2 to 3 minutes between an all-out set of alternating dumbbell curls. But if you're curling the 25 or 30s for a few reps and you're still a noob, you probably won't need that. If I do an all-out set of 8 to 10 reps on leg press, I definitely need a good 3-plus minutes. I don't think there's much of a benefit of resting 5-plus minutes, and this meta seems like it's just a precursor to set the people up for some higher volume is better meta, because drumroll, if you take short rest periods, then it just takes about double the amount of volume to get the same results. And he's like, instead of asking me to break down dumb metas like this, learn the mechanisms. So we're now calling meta-analysis dumb.
Bro, it's just wild to me because he's making the claim that it would take you twice as long to get the same hypertrophy with short rest times. Brother, there are literally two studies on shorter versus longer rest times where they do more sets to make up for the lower volume load or lower performance with shorter rest times. One, as I mentioned, found that you just needed to do more sets with 1 minute of rest and long-going colleagues to get the same hypertrophy, and the other found more hypertrophy when you rested for 20 seconds between sets and did more sets to make up for it. So even that claim is, one, based on two studies, and two, based on sort of, if anything, mixed evidence. And then, like, so I went back to the trained lifter studies. As you mentioned, the one study by Schoenfeld and colleagues found greater hypertrophy from 3 minutes of rest versus 1 minute of rest in trained lifters when training their upper and lower body. But then the study by D'Souza and colleagues and the study by Souza Jr. and colleagues both found, if anything, slightly better hypertrophy from 80 seconds of rest on average versus 120. So with lower rest times of between 1 to 2 minutes versus 2 minutes. So, and that's both in trained lifters in upper and upper lower approach. So, like, all of these claims are just made up by and large.
And the idea that, oh, I need 3 minutes to be ready for the next set. Okay, fair enough. Take three
also,
minutes.
Do you? Based on what? Ready for what?
Yeah.
Because based on the results here, like, you don't need to maximize performance on every set to get a good hypertrophy stimulus. That's a big assumption, is that you need to maximize performance on every single set to get the maximum hypertrophy benefit. You know, like, yeah.
If you're training close to failure, let's take a practical example. We do a set of squats, 8 reps at whatever, 400 pounds, and we rest for a minute and a half. Let's say we are completely dumb and we saw the meme and we just took the 1.5 minute approximate recommendation as gospel. And then we do the next set and we get just 5 reps. And then for the third set, we have to bring the load down, because otherwise we would just get 2 reps, and then we do, I don't know, 350 pounds. Like, what tells us that that will lead to less hypertrophy.
Yeah.
Than if we were to stay at 400 pounds?
It's just completely, like, certain people in the industry, including Paul Carter, just look at things the wrong way around, where it's, they form a mechanistic rationale or mechanistic argument or rationalist argument, essentially, around why something should work better.
Mm.
And then they will cling on to that approach.
Die on that hill.
Even in the face of directly contradictory empirical evidence on the outcome of interest. It's like, we literally measured hypertrophy from these approaches in these studies and found the best hypertrophy 1 to 2 minutes. Like, that directly refutes your mechanistic rationale. And importantly, with any mechanistic rationale that you can form around any topic within lifting, you can form a variety of rationales. And some of them will be diametrically opposing each other, right? Like, I could say, look, actually, trained lifters, because you've been training for a while, your conditioning improves, and so you need shorter rest times, and you can still get the same hypertrophy. And in fact, like, some studies, the D'Souza study and the D'Souza Jr. study, from what I recall, had essentially compared always 2 minutes of rest to a diminishing rest interval over the weeks, so such that the average rest duration was about 80 seconds. And they found, if anything, slightly better hypertrophy from decreasing rest interval as participants got more trained, right? So you can make the directly opposing argument in terms of the directionality of effect, and it still makes sense. And I can make many such arguments, and they can all make rationally perfect sense. But then if the direct evidence on the topic, directly measuring muscle size changes, contradicts those rationales, then clearly you got to rethink your approach. But no, it's like, no, I'm going to stick to this in the face of evidence that refutes what I am saying here. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. They see this list of arguments and they're like, okay, yeah, that clearly makes sense because these are established things that we know for a fact will make a meaningful difference to long-term hypertrophy outcomes. Like hypertrophy training, as more and more research comes out, seems to be even more flexible than previously thought. As long as you're training with a sufficient intensity of effort, obviously volume to a certain extent, things
nice seem try to be, we knew it. Yeah. This rest time meta-analysis, it was just setting the stage for something much bigger. Big volume is coming, you know, just brace yourselves. The conspiracy is insane as well.
Yeah, and on that note, for the conspiracy theorists out there, we have a book coming out with Dr. Schoenfeld, no joke, on minimum dose training for hypertrophy and strength. So 4D chess, confusing the crowds. Are they signed to big volume? Are they signed to minimum dose? You will never know.
Playing both sides, baby.
Indeed. But yeah, Paul Carter, our brother in Christ. Are you Christian as well by default?
Me?
Yeah.
Never asked me this? That's crazy. No, I'm not Christian at all.
What are you?
Atheist, agnostic, whatever you want to call it. Not thinking about it.
You don't get baptized or stuff in
I was chilling.
God-forsaken country?
Well, okay. I was born in Belgium. You feel me? My family, we were expats, so.
Yeah, you don't even have an official language over there, so shout out to Belgium.
We have several, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Get cringe. Fucked. What was I going to say?
Paul Carter, debate.
Yeah, sure, anytime. But this might have been the most muscle and feels episode ever. We dropped the Paul Carter diss track. We talked about, as of yet, unpublished studies because we're social media PhDs. And we also managed to turn it into another Lincoln Partial episode.
And plugged MyoDapt, Rascal Apparel, future studies. Like, it's we on. Nice neck gains as well.
Only right. The viewers know.
Cool. We'll leave it at that. Thank you so much for listening. MyoDapt.com. Register your interest. We're coming out. Once we make the fucking millions, I'm going to go absolutely apeshit. It's no more disclaimers, no more nothing. I'm going after everyone. Just get us to a financial secure place so that we don't have to care about canceling. And trust me, I'll give you the best content out there. Just constantly dunking on people. Terms and conditions apply. We'll not do that. I am just joking. We love everyone. Muscle and feels. Thank you for listening and watching.
Peace.